You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 15th, 2020. It's not safe for work.
Coming to you live from the Cornfield Resistance, where our governor is going to listen to the scientists no matter how loud the COVIDiots squeal. It's the Professional Left with Drip Glass and Blue Gal. And J.B. Pritzker, but he's not here right now.
J.B. Pritzker's busy.
He's busy right now. Yeah.
I want to sing that song. In Illinois, we love the governor.
Yeah.
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 He's doing a good job.
He is.
And, yeah. He doesn't have a lot of time for podcasts or us, but
no.
We do like him. And we'll talk a little bit more about him later in the show.
Although we are a valuable pipeline to the 9 liberals who live in our community. So if he wants to reach out to him.
If he wants to reach out to those people.
Yeah. He can just lean out the window.
He's got their votes already.
He does. He does. But if he wants to keep them informed. Then he can just lean out the window and yell, or he can come onto our podcast and we can invite him on to talk and stuff and ask him about underwriting us for a couple of million dollars.
He could put on his vest and take his armored SUV down.
Yeah. And we're going to play a little game at the end of this podcast called Compare and Contrast. Governor Rauner, Governor Hedge Fund with Governor Pritzker. But for now, I welcome you all to the Professional Left podcast.
We only have time for one fake sponsor this week. This week's show is brought to you by our fake sponsor, My Primal Scream Pillow. Available not for purchase by our Not Premier members. My Primal Scream Pillow, it's just a pillow and you scream into it.
Damn it. I was really hoping that we had some premium stuff to sell people for money, but we really don't. Actually, that's not true. We have merch at our website.
Yes, we do.
With graphics by our wonderful nerd angel, Tammy, who puts them up there. And we have
the angel nerd. Yes,
we have a couple of more things we want to add to our suite of sweet merch that we're going to get to, soon, very soon, down the road. At some point, very soon down the road.
Yes,
because that's
Griffith has all kinds of great ideas. And one of the things that was fascinating to me this week is finding out that a certain snarky website whose name begins with C.
Yeah.
HIVE is marketing t-shirts and stickers that say dumpster fire on them.
Yeah. Yep.
And I thought, why aren't they sending Driftglass a dollar every time they sell one of their $30 t-shirts with your idea on them? But
there just seems to be a real aversion to attributing that phrase to me. I think because it was in a political post that pretty much did what I have been doing for 15 years, which is take David Brooks apart atom by atom. And that's not something they want to sort of filthying up. If I were a 17th century or 18th century wit, that'd be fine. I'm long dead. Everyone else is long dead. All the feuds are buried and gone. But they, I don't think, want the shit that would come along with attributing the phrase of the decade to an asshole liberal blogger talking about a New York Times op-ed writer.
I think that's the case. Yes. It's too current. You're too ahead of your time, Driftglass.
We have a vast readership of people we love and who love us back. And that, to me, during a pandemic is worth more than all the attributions in the world.
Yeah. I mean, we have spent a lot of time counting our blessings.
We do.
This year. This year we have. Yeah.
And just having everybody under one roof and having them healthy and having them relatively sane.
I do want to say my deep condolences to my sister's partner, Joe, who lost his daughter this week to COVID. And we have heard from other people who have positive tests or are in hospital or whatever is going on. You know, it can touch your family without any warning.
Right.
And so we're grateful to be healthy for now and one day at a time. And we are working to be safe and staying at home and wearing masks when we go out. It's according to the state guidelines. And here we are visiting with you.
One of the adjustments we've had to make is recording this podcast on Thursday.
Today, this week, we have to record our podcast on Thursday. We know that, you know, Donald Trump is probably going to sue Barack Obama tomorrow, and it will not be on this podcast. Middle child has her AP test tomorrow afternoon.
Yes.
And she needs absolute quiet and as much of the internet in this house as she can have. I mean, and it shouldn't be a problem, even if we were recording. But as we have heard from them, Mom, you have a very loud laugh.
Yes.
And so
yes.
They don't want that. That carries, and they do not want to hear it during their eight. And I understand. I want middle child to do well on the AP test.
Yes.
And so
it's stressful enough.
It's stressful enough.
Apparently a 17-hour test.
Yeah, well,
it's a long test. It's like 4 hours.
This is AP literature and composition, something to that effect. So there are essays to write, and she has to be organized about it. Mm-hmm. And it's intense. And she's an intense person anyway.
She is.
So bless her. She's my daughter.
It's a small house and the walls are thin, and there's a lot of people under one roof that we didn't expect to have under one roof. Again, we are lucky that this is the case. We're lucky.
No, she was expecting to take this test on paper at school, and that's not happening. Yeah. So, but we are accommodating her by recording a day early.
Yeah.
And so we apologize if we're not up to date on all of the news that happened on Friday.
I suggest you
go read Crooks and Liars, because it will be there. And Driftglass blog. We will be responding to the day's events. It's just not on this show.
That's an excellent shameless promotion.
To talk about anyway.
That's an excellent shameless promotion, first of all. And second of all, those are real things.
No, they're real things.
My Primal Scream pillow is not a real thing. My blog, the Driftglass blog, and Blue Gal's excellent Crooks and Liars blog, that gets, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people read that every day, are real things that have real content that you enjoy. And please enjoy yourself. Dig in. They're both free. There's no paywall. Yeah. And you'll get the news of the day.
There's no paywall, but Crooks and Liars now has a new ad-free option. And it's $1 for the first month now. So that's kind of cool. That started this week. So that is kind of cool. If you just don't like ads and you want to turn them off, you can turn them off for $1.
Does that ad-free option extend to all the other websites I go to? Do I carry
point.
Like a
There's
shield?
Actually, you know what's funny? There's actually a disclaimer on that. It doesn't count on all the other stuff that goes on.
You know who else pays their people? The Bulwark. The Bulwark pays their people. The Bulwark.
There's another good segue.
I try. I stay up all night wondering how I can move from top to top.
Who funds the Bulwark?
That's a really good question. All we know about the Bulwark is that it ported everything from the Weekly Standard, including a lot of the writers and so forth, over to a website once the Weekly Standard was gutted after Donald Trump came into existence and they all ran for the hills. And they have gathered unto themselves a whole bunch of conservative writers who write in lots of other magazines, and they have their own podcast, and they do like an episode a day. So they are a big steaming engine of conservative content.
They're immediately given validity by Brian Williams.
Yes.
Like, oh, and now they're of the Bulwark. So Charlie Sykes, come on over and sit here and we'll put Bulwark up on the screen, even though that wasn't a thing 3 days ago.
And that's Bill Kristol the same. Bill Kristol went from being the editor of Weekly Standard to being some nutcase that keeps hanging around the studio. Go, oh, no, he's in on the Bulwark now. So we'll put that on the Chiron, and now he's legitimate, which, you know, that's, hey, I could put the Professional Love Podcast or Driftglass below my pretty face and be just as legitimate.
And those are established brands that have been around for 10 to 15 years. Yes, right.
We have weathered many, many storms. The point being that the reason they have been, the reason you see them everywhere, the reason they get a million downloads a day of their podcast, the reason they're viable is not because they are great or good or noble. That's sort of independent of all that. It's because they have an enormous engine of the mainstream media behind them pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing.
They have personal friends.
Yes,
that's what they have. Connections. Social connections.
The worst people in conservative media, and these people were all the worst people in conservative media right up until the ship sank and they had to swim for their lives, and they landed at MSNBC and CNN. And suddenly they're welcome guests. They're the chair is pulled out. And as I noted today, Now that we're running against Barack Obama, I'm wondering, are we going to see any of Rick Wilson's greatest hits that we have all been very carefully forgotten?
Because explain what you mean by that, because Rick Wilson, when Barack Obama ran in 2008, which is in our lifetimes, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Yes.
Rick Wilson had some ideas about how to run against Barack Obama.
Well, Obama mania had to be defeated at any cost. So, you know what? I hear a lot of good things about this Reverend Wright fellow, this screaming, angry black preacher who doesn't sound like a real patriot, doesn't look like a real American. Let's see if we can't just jam him down Barack Obama's throat sideways and stop his presidency that way.
And in case you've forgotten, if you think that Obamagate and unmasking and all the things that we're going to talk about this week are somehow being force-fed into the media by nefarious forces, Reverend Wright was three times as big.
Yes, it was. And because they had to stop Barack Obama at all costs, because the people who are the people who have plush velvet seats on the mainstream media were the worst Iraq war pimps, the most nefarious liberal slanderers, and they made a fortune doing it. This is how they made their living, stomping on people like us and shitting all over our values. And once we started winning, once their reality started collapsing, they turned their attention to trying to destroy the incoming Obama administration and the candidacy. And Rick Wilson only knows one way to fight, and that's like a fucking sewer rat.
Right.
So that's what he did. And Rick Wilson is now a sewer rat who hates Donald Trump temporarily until there's a Democratic president, and then he's going to go work for Tom Cotton.
Nikki Haley, or whoever. Right.
Whoever drags a $20 bill in front of him will get his services.
Right.
He is not your friend. But I feel it's my
last. Do you remember, Sam Cedar, I believe it was?
I do.
Walking on the National Mall and interviewing Republican Tea Party type voters. This was before the Tea Party. And saying, well, I don't trust Barack Obama because, number one, he's a Muslim. And number two, Reverend Wright.
Oh, God. Reverend Wright
and,
is Muslim.
And Sam Cedar saying to the person, well, you've got to pick one because Reverend Wright is Christian. And he's going to church at Reverend Wright's church.
No, it's a Muslim church.
That means he's a Christian.
No.
And the woman really would not accept anything that Sam Cedar was saying. It was just, oh, come on. He's all the nefarious things I say he is because I've been absolutely brainwashed by Glenn Beck.
And by Fox News and by, 20 years of conservative hate radio.
Glenn Beck was at Fox News at that point,
And so the idea that this is a brand new phenomena on the right is ridiculous. They've always been this way. And they've been this way because turning them into these people, engineering these people to become these brain dead, bleach guzzling, gun toting morons is what got Rick's candidates elected. And so
that was his job, was to get them elected.
Yeah, that was his job. He's utterly amoral. He doesn't really give a shit who he hurts or what burns to the ground around him as long as he gets paid. And he and the rest of the boys of the Bulwark made a bet. They bet that Donald Trump would lose and that they would then come to power as the We Told You So caucus of the Republican Party. But Donald Trump didn't lose. Suddenly they're on the outs with all these people who write all the checks. Well, where are we going to find a couch to crash on for the next 4 years? Hey, liberals are dopes. They'll let us do anything. Let's go crash at MSNBC and CNN. Well, how do we get in there? We'll just say shitty things about Donald Trump. And we'll be really mean about it. And it'll be true. And because they are so desperate for validation from conservatives, they will give us airtime. They'll give us book deals. They'll give us columns in the New York Times. Writing and saying shit that liberals that they wouldn't give the time of fucking day to for 20 years. People on the left have been saying this shit about the Republican Party for decades. And we couldn't get anywhere near a fucking camera at all. And you go to sleep for 5 minutes, you wake up, and all the people who were shitting on you a day ago now have all the prime seating in the media. And there are no liberals to be found anywhere to ask them really simple questions. So my job, I believe it to be, is to monitor these people, is to keep tabs on them, because I absolutely know what their game is. Their game is to ride this out under the cover, in the bosom of liberal media until the storm passes. And then they will knife us in the back. And I have lots of people, dear liberal friends, who say, yeah, temporary alliances are very important. They do good ads, all of which is true. But, you know, once we're done with them, like, no. You know, they're using you, asshole, not the other way around. The people with the credibility, the people with the cachet, the people who were right about everything was us, not them. They were wrong about everything. You are loaning them your credibility, not the other way around. You are propping them up, not the other way around. And when they are done with you, they will shit on you. They will walk in front of, they will be done with all of their liberal friends. They'll turn around and say, look, I'm a both sides kind of guy. Look at all my dear liberal friends.
It's time to bring the country together. And they'll have three coats of shellac on their lifeboats.
Let's all unite around Tom Cotton, you know, and you and I will be going, but. And all their liberal friends will be going, well, wait a minute, what, but no, except those liberal friends will never get time in front of a camera because it's who controls the camera. And the people who control the cameras keep pointing them at Charlie Sykes and Bill Kristol and Rick Wilson, not the other people who were right all along. So this week, I listened to the Bulwark podcast every now and then. And this week, Charlie Sykes was promoting an article in which he just strongly recommended that Joe Biden reach out to those McCain Republicans.
The McCain-Palin Republicans?
Those McCain-Palin Republicans. He got everything wrong and backwards. And this is an article in the Washington Monthly, but why Joe Biden should reach out to McCain Republicans.
Sykes get paid to write this?
No, he didn't write it. He promoted it.
Oh, he promoted
it. This is part of the sort of constellation of conservative writings that Bulwark uses its media position, which exists solely because they have friends at MSNBC and CNN to push. And this is a constant message with them that Joe Biden should remain in the center. Joe Biden should reach out to Republicans, which is fine. I have no problem with that. But I have a real problem with it coming from Charlie Sykes, because my take on this is, like the pilgrims to the Virgin of the Guadalupe, they should be approaching the Democratic Party on their knees, begging forgiveness. This Donald Trump and the Republican Party that he heads is entirely their fault. They have no business telling a single fucking Democrat what to do about anything. They watched their party fall completely to bits, be taken over by a madman, and all those base people, all of Charlie Sykes's listeners, all of Bill Kristol's readers, all flocked to the orange madman. And they're selling one of two stories. Either we never knew, in which case you're too stupid and your opinion is invalid and you never knew, then why would I ever listen to you? Or I knew and I didn't care, because they were winning the election, in which case you're amoral and I don't want to give you the time of day. Either way, the Donald Trump Republican Party is entirely your fault. And if you would like to come to the Democratic Party and tell us how to run shit, get a job scrubbing floors for 10 years and work your way up the organization. You do not get to glide in from the apex of the GOP to the apex of the Democratic Party and tell us how to run shit.
They should be scrubbing floors at a VA hospital.
They absolutely should.
For Iraq war veterans.
And this idea that these people would need to be courted or pretty please, here's a cookie, let's come on. No. They're the sinners. They're the ones with blood on their hands. And I see it, and you see it, and pretty much every liberal I know sees it. And what is fascinating is how deeply invested the mainstream media is in never mentioning the fact that Donald Trump would not exist but for people like Bill Kristol and Charlie Sykes and Joe Scarborough and Rick Wilson and all the rest of them. That they owe all of us a big fat fucking apology before we do anything for them. And if they can't muster that, then they're running a completely different game. If they can't admit this happened, that their actual history really exists and really did lead to this moment, then they're lying to you. If they're so afraid that someone will ask them some question about what they were doing in 2008 or 2010 or 12 or 14, if they're that terrified that they won't even entertain those questions, they're hiding something. And it cannot be good, and it can't be for the benefit of the Democratic Party. That is the end of my little speech about why you can't trust an ever-Trumper. Stuart Stevens is my exception. Bruce Bartlett is my exception. Stuart Stevens' book is entitled, as I recall, as I understand it, It Was All a Lie. Yes, liberals are right. Okay, no problem there. Boom. I don't want you running the Republican Party or Democratic Party, but I accept the fact that you accept responsibility for your shit and the shit you did. Bruce Bartlett bailed on this party years ago and is one of its most vicious and continuous critics. I totally accept that. They're on my team. I do not trust anyone who blocks people and won't answer simple fucking questions about how their party got to be this way. And if the subject ever comes up, they fucking lie about it. Donald Trump is just a black swan event. He just showed up on the horizon. He hypnotized the entire party. He mesmerized all these good people who I loved and partied with and who were my brothers and sisters. And they just lost their minds. Suddenly the Republican Party turned into this other thing overnight in 2016, and I had nothing to do with it, and I'm completely confused. Well, if that's your resume, then no one should ever listen to anything you have to say about anything. So why don't you shut up and go away? Anyway, that really is the end of my soapbox about
it. Do you want to take a sip of hydrochloroquine?
I need to take a sip.
Wash it all out now.
I am just like a lot of you out there, I am just tired of fighting a fight against people who should have been defeated 20 years ago.
Or should be sued out of existence economically and in terms of career. Yes.
And yet we keep returning to the same subject. And so now Donald Trump is going to run against Barack Obama.
Yeah. How's that going to work out for him?
Well, to quote Lucius Fox from The Dark Knight, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Well, tell them the story of Lucius Fox in case they forgot.
Oh, Lucius Fox. Lucius Fox is at Morgan Freeman in The Dark Knight. And one of the employees there discovers Bruce Wayne's secret and decides that he's going to blackmail Bruce Wayne. And he comes in and says, I want $10 million a year for life. And I want this and I want that because I know your dirty secrets. Ha, ha, ha. I'll out you to the world. And Lucius Fox says to him words to the effect of, so your employer, the richest man, one of the richest men in the world, who goes out and beats up criminals with his bare hands by night as a vigilante. And your plan is to threaten this man. Is that right? Is that your plan? And the employee suddenly realizes, oh, that's a really, really, really bad idea. And wishes him good luck with that. Mm-hmm. And that Lucius Fox is Bruce Wayne's gadget man. Now, I look forward to Donald Trump trying to run against the most popular man in the solar system. Mm-hmm. I really do. Mm-hmm. But I do have a bone to pick with Barack Obama.
Well, and let's be clear. The reason Barack Obama is so popular, I believe, is because Mitch McConnell refused to allow him to govern.
Yes.
So he was unable to push through after Obamacare. He was unable to push through any other program that might have been controversial, that might have left some people out.
Yes.
That might have been, you know, something that didn't work out quite right. And he became a figurehead. He became the king of America.
Yeah.
Literally. I mean, he became just this person who did photo ops and gardens and went to high schools and hugged people and hugged children. And, you know, you had this week at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, a little video of him meeting with science students. And everything he did was connecting with people and being nice. And Halloween, you know, was so fun with the Obamas.
And killing Osama bin Laden.
And killing Osama bin Laden, yes.
Yeah.
And so because of that, because Mitch McConnell did not allow a single thing to go through the Senate from the president, including filibustering his own motion.
Right. That's the end.
In a way, it freed Barack Obama to just be a non-controversial, nice guy.
Mm-hmm. Rhetorical, right?
And they made that bed for themselves.
Yes, they did. He certainly did.
He's popular because of them.
Well, and he's popular because he endured 8 years of absolutely unrelenting racism and overt sabotage and outright sedition from Mitch McConnell's Republican Party, the Republican Party that Charlie Sykes and Rick Wilson all swear to God just lost their minds 5 minutes ago.
Including traitor Tom Cotton and his 40 senators signing, 40 Republican senators and House members signing a seditious letter.
Yeah.
In print, their names on it. Yeah.
So we have in our memories, even though Republicans don't, we have memories of that 8-year period. And mm-hmm. we remember what happened. And we remember it as a perfect, near perfect laboratory experiment in what happens if you actually nominate and elect a centrist, a person mm-hmm. who is David Brooks's wet dream, an absolutely down the middle, I will bend over backwards to give Republicans anything they want in exchange for helping me to wind down the Iraq war, stop the global economy from collapsing, and providing health care to millions of American people who don't have it, mm-hmm. and a bunch of other stuff I want to do. But we are in the middle of multiple crises, all of which came to a head or were explicitly precipitated by the Republican Party. I was elected to clean up their shit, and I would really appreciate their help in doing so. And for 8 years, they told him to go fuck himself, loudly and clearly in the most blatantly racist manner possible. Then they nominated and elected the king of the birthers. So we know the Republican Party is absolutely scumbag beyond redemption. I'm talking about Republican voters, Republican bundlers, Republican organizers. If you have an R after your name and you work to get Donald Trump elected,
you're okay with racism. Absolutely.
And you were sanguine with all of this shit that happened during the Obama administration. You are the fucking problem. Period. Full stop. There's no, in my mind, there's no debate about this. This is the starting point of every conversation. So when Barack Obama said that on a phone call that the handling of the when he on the phone talked about the coronavirus crisis handling by the White House as an absolute chaotic disaster, that is true. And I was greatly heartened to read that because that is a true thing. That's a true fact. My problem came 30 seconds later when 2004 DNC keynote Purple State Obama showed up. And then it was, and I'm quoting, this election that's coming up on every level is so important because what we're going to be battling is, hold on to your seats, not just a particular individual or a political party. What we're fighting against are these long-term trends in which being selfish, being tribal, being divided, and seeing the other as the enemy, that has become a stronger impulse in American life. And I cannot convey to you how stunningly wrong that is on every level. I get that in 2004 and 2008, when you're trying to impress, when you're literally going to Charles Krauthammer's house, when you're courting George Will's good opinion, when you're sucking up to David Brooks, by quoting, I forget the name of the philosopher, Niebuhr. They're at a dinner party and they're quoting Niebuhr to each other, and they're all just giddy because this guy's smart and he's urbane and he's clever and my God, he's well read. We hate him and we're going to try to destroy him, but at least we can all get along. Those days are over. We had your administration. We had an 8-year test case in what happens if Republicans are actually given the perfect example of the Democratic president they all say they want, mm-hmm. a person who will bend over backwards to work with them, who will give them credit for anything they want, who will give them anything mm-hmm. they want, who will meet them at the 80-yard line and call it halfway.
Well, he will at least meet them at the 50-yard line, and then they push him back to the 0-yard right. line every time.
Yeah. Every time. And then the coup de grace was robbing you of your Supreme Court nomination.
Mm-hmm.
I am absolutely done with that Barack Obama, who keeps pretending that never happened. This election is about one individual, Mr. President. It really is about one political party.
And that individual is Mitch McConnell.
and it's this whole tribal bullshit. Christ almighty, while you're at it, why not just nag the Allies during World War II for being too tribal? Or the civil rights movement for being too tribal? Because they were on the opposite side of people who had a different opinion than they did. And really, isn't that the problem, that they disagreed, that they were both in different tribes? No. The problem was one side of the argument was absolutely dead fucking wrong, and the other side was right. And the reason the other side had to rise up and become a tribe was the incredibly depraved behavior of the first group. If the mm-hmm. Republican Party were not a completely uncivilized band of thugs and racists and barbarians, we would not have to gather together to fight them. But we have to. If you want to call that a tribe, fine. I'm all for it. But this bullshit about how it's not about one party or one person, yes, it really is. Yes, it really is. And it bothers the shit out of me that you cannot form your mouth to say those words. I understand that your brand.
I'm going to defend Barack Obama a little bit, though.
All right.
In that Barack Obama and Joe Biden, for that matter.
Yes.
Feel that they have a responsibility to the Republic.
I understand
now,
that.
Your responsibility to the Republic is, as far as I can see, is we should have pushed the Confederates out to the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes.
In 1865 and been done with it.
Yes. That's my position. I stick to that position.
And,
yes.
And Barack Obama and Biden, their position is, look, Republicans are still Americans.
Right.
And your opinion, I believe, is we cannot be on both sides of the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
Absolutely my opinion. Yes.
Yeah.
And you can't.
Yeah.
And you can't. I don't know how. And this is, again, something I would ask Barack Obama if I had him on the podcast. I wouldn't yell at him, but I'd say respectfully, how do you continue to pretend this isn't about the Republican Party and this isn't about Donald Trump as the manifestation of the Republican Party and as the manifestation of the Newt Gingrich, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity Republican Party? How do you continue to maintain that this isn't about them when it manifestly is about them? They are the problem. And I don't understand how you wrap your – now, I understand that your brand is bringing together and purple
unity,
America.
Right.
And that
right.
there are tens of millions of kids in this country, especially African-American kids, who look up to you as a father figure. And
right.
you are living for history now. I get that. I totally get that. That is a luxury that is a burden I don't have to carry. I'm just an asshole podcaster.
Right, right.
I'm just a blogger, but I still am baffled by the fact that at this late date, you cannot bring yourself to say, no, the problem is Mitch McConnell. The problem is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
The problem is the party that created them.
He's leaving that to us.
Okay.
preserving his brand as a uniter for the children that look up to him as dad.
Probably so.
And that does not excuse being willfully blind to, you know, in print and in his discourse to the wrong that has been done to him and his movement.
Well, and that's what's so insidious about Republicanism.
Yeah.
See, in public, it can often be asymptomatic. you know,
yes, it's kind of like COVID in that way.
You know, and this is something that actually this quarantine has lifted the veil on. Now, you and I saw this during the Iraq War. When George Bush was the greatest president on earth, he was the most brilliant tactician. He was the most brilliant general. He was the greatest economist. He was all the Republicans really, really sold George Bush as the apotheosis of conservatism. He's just the best of the best of the best. And look at that vice president. He's even better. And when it all fell apart, they suddenly didn't know who he was. Where? What are you talking about? I'm not a Republican. I never supported him. And exactly the same pattern is being repeated with Donald Trump on crack. It's happening twice as fast, and the destruction is twice as lethal, but it's exactly the same pattern from exactly the same people. And so we already know this, but most people out there, most people, normal people who aren't podcasters, who aren't bloggers, who haven't been studying this stuff intently for decades and writing about it and thinking about it for decades, might not notice that their Republican family member or friend or the person at the store or the person in the pew next to them in the church is in fact a raving racist asshole, because Republicans have been taught to hide their disease in public. You know, it's not polite to walk around just shrieking the N-word every time you see Barack Obama. It's not polite
or brandishing a gun just because a woman is governor.
Right.
I mean, that's what's going on in Michigan, right?
Yeah. But now so Republicanism has gone relatively undetected in the heartland because it's asymptomatic. Now, when Republicans get together and they talk among themselves, oh my goodness, all the sores on their body are exposed in their glory. And they talk about Hillary Clinton in the most vicious terms, and they talk about Barack Obama in the most racist terms. But they're smart enough to know that you don't say that shit in church. You know, you might just sort of wink and nod at each other. You know, that old Klan, you know, the secret handshake shit, but you don't actually say this shit out loud. You let Rush Limbaugh do that. You let Sean Hannity do that. You express your frustration with the goddamn government, and then you go home and, you know, jerk off to Sean Hannity. But now we see them in all their glory. Now I think everyone should see them in all their glory. This is who they have always been, in private, among each other, under the rose, as they say. But now they're just doing it out and proud in public because Donald Trump says, yeah, fuck it. It's cool. Go ahead. Embrace your inner Klansmen, brothers. Come on out of the woodwork. It's safe. And they've done it. They've left themselves with no way out. There's no way to back away from loving Donald Trump. Except, of course, when his regime collapses, you will see Tea Party 2.0. They never liked the tweet.
I gotta warn you about something. This morning on Fox and Friends, they aired an interview that was on an earlier Fox program. I'm not sure which one, but it was aired on Fox and Friends this morning. The secret Trump voter. The Trump voter who won't tell you. They will never talk to a pollster.
No.
But you know they're out there. And they just don't want the burden of being attacked on Facebook or in their families for supporting Donald Trump. But secretly, they know that the president's doing the best job he can. And that's how they're going to pretend and convince their I hate doing this, Driftglass. Using the term reprogrammable meatbags is not in my lexicon.
Yes, but it should be in Merriam-Webster's dictionary alongside
Driftglass. It should be given credit.
Yeah, that's what they are. They're meatbags. We are all meatbags.
What I'm interested in is not the meatbag. I'm interested in the programming.
Yeah,
because programming is what you can see. You can point to the TV screen and say, aha, we now have unmasking as the latest brainwash word that's unmasking. Being used on Fox without any explanation as to what it is.
But it's terrible.
But it's Solyndra, it's Benghazi, it's an exotic word that's not used every day, and it's a trigger word to trigger strong emotion. It's Burisma.
It's Alinsky.
How did Burisma drop, right?
It's Alinsky, it's Soros. It's very sinister sounding.
Alinsky. Right. And so this segment saying, you know, really, there's a tremendous number of secret Trump supporters out there. So you shouldn't feel alone if you support the president, because there are just it's just not reflected in the polls because there are so many people who will not talk to pollsters because they don't want the hassle of the angry left coming after them.
Well, let me speaking for the angry left. as a middle-aged white guy.
Yeah.
Republicans I have run into in Springfield have been remarkably candid about their really contemptuous opinion and their crazy conspiracy theories and their deep belief that Barack Obama really was a Muslim, no matter what he says, and on and on and on and on. And these are pillars of the community. And the ones that don't believe that shit necessarily are perfectly willing to nod and nod and nod and count up the contributions and count up the votes and know that Rodney Davis will be reelected because these fucking morons will vote for them. And I don't necessarily believe that stuff, but I believe in tax cuts because I'm very rich. And that's what I'm in it for. And if I have to put up with listening to these rubes rant about, you know, Bircher shit in front of me, well, I sit in my coffee and eat my scrambled eggs. Well, that's what I'll do because at the end of the day, these idiots are going to give me a tax cut. And if I have to put up with Donald Trump, you know, fuck the liberals. I don't like him anyway. So he's going to own the libs. He's going to give me a tax cut and my life's going to continue being great. So that's you have these cynical manipulators at the top and you have the Republican base voters who are very much reprogrammable meatbags.
I don't like that word myself, but I understand it. And what bothers me so much is I don't consider it a kind thing to say.
It isn't.
But then I watch and it fits.
It does. That's the problem.
Oh, wait a minute. Like, I see the programming and I see the programming work. That it's not, well, you know, 6 months ago it was the economy's great. My 401k is doing great, and that means Donald Trump's a great president.
Right.
Now it's, well, you know, a lot of people out there are secretly supporting the president, and I don't have to tell a pollster how I'm voting.
No.
And you can see it in real time, this change of, we're just going to program you that you have to vote a certain way and give us the tax cut result that we want up here in Fox News land. Right. I did want to point out, Driftglass, that Lindsey Graham has responded to Donald Trump's tweet about subpoenaing Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And he said, be careful what you wish for. he said, I don't think I can, as chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Judiciary Committee, I don't believe I can do that, Mr. President. But even if I could, you got to be careful what you wish for.
Well, and as you pointed out to me this week, and I gently held your hand and said, it doesn't matter. Uh-huh, these people have the part of their brain that recognizes hypocrisy or conflict has just been burned out of their brain. They don't even see it anymore. That Donald Trump can say on one day that he has absolute fucking authority to do anything he wants. Presidents have that authority. I'm a king. I can do whatever I want. The next day say, oh my God, can you believe Barack Obama investigated Michael Flynn? Oh my God, that's the worst scandal that's ever happened in American history. We need to haul his ass into court and make him testify. And not, well, he did it as president, right? And you just said presidents have absolute authority to do whatever they want. And the little tiny part of the Republican brain that can recognize, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense, was burned out around 1994. And it's never going to grow back. And we should stop waiting for them to get outraged by the hypocrisy that they exhibit every day. They're not capable of doing it. All they know is the black guy did it and it's wrong. The white guy did it and it's right because they're a bunch of fucking racists. It all comes down to race. The reason that they're hauling Barack Obama back on the stage is because he's black and they want to run against a black guy. That's the reason. The Republican Party is a racist party. And if you are a Republican, you're either racist or you're racist adjacent and you're really cool with it, which is even worse, actually, because you fucking well know better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, would you like to talk more about unmasking?
Yes, I would. I wrote a post on Facebook and then I cross-posted it over at Crooks and Liars. And it's just a quick explanation as to what unmasking actually is for your Facebook friends. And it's been shared like 70 times already. So
tell us a story, Auntie Blue Gal.
That's great. This whole fake unmasking, fake scandal from Hannity. And it's primarily Hannity that's pushing this. And then, of course, Trump picks it up and it's off we go. Is really easy to understand and easy to explain. There is a U.S. spy, or there was a U.S. spy in the National Security Group named Michael Flynn.
Yes.
We find out about it because we are listening in on Russian spy conversations. The government is not allowed to report on U.S. citizens except when there's evidence that spying is going on. So if Russian spies order a pizza in D.C., that pizza guy is not going to be put on a watch list. But if the Russian spies talk secrets with someone at the Pentagon, people like the president need to know that. That's called unmasking. The president gets to know the name of the U.S. citizen at the Pentagon who is trading secrets with Russian spies.
Mm-hmm.
The masking protects pizza guys, but unmasks U.S. citizens who are doing spy stuff. Michael Flynn was caught when his voice was taped by our intelligence agencies who were listening in on Russian spy conversations. This was a huge deal. The CIA went through channels to unmask Michael Flynn and tell the president that there's this guy at the Pentagon trying to make deals with Russian spies for natural gas stock holdings. It was about money and giving Flynn natural gas stock in exchange for dropping Russian sanctions. That's what it was about. Mm-hmm. So the FISA court says, oh, my God, yes, warn the president about this U.S. citizen, which ordinarily you're not supposed to do.
Who was the president at the time, Blue Gal?
Barack Obama. It doesn't matter who it was, actually.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't matter. Exactly right.
Warn the president about this U.S. citizen because, OMG, it's a U.S. citizen promising to give away national security, our national interests, for money. And he has the power to do it. And on Inauguration Day, Obama sits down with the new president, Trump. And one of the things he tells Trump is, OMG, don't hire Michael Flynn because he's doing Russian spy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Trump hires him anyway because the black guy isn't going to tell him what to do.
Well, and Michael Flynn was a cheerleader for Lock Her Up. So,
right. You know, he was Lock Her Up. So, yeah. So now, at that point, Michael Flynn was put in charge of national security for like 9 days. Mm-hmm. And the spy stuff catches up with him and he's fired because he lied to the vice president. That was the story then at the time. But now it's May 2020, and Donald Trump and Fox News are scared Trump might not be reelected because, let's face it, he's a big fat fail on COVID because in January he put the stock market ahead of people dying of a virus. That's an easy mistake to make when you call Lou Dobbs the news. So Hannity rolls into action and makes unmasking this magic word. It's just like Solyndra. It's just like Benghazi. It's a trigger word to get you to think there's this huge crime that Barack Obama committed, unmasking.
Mm-hmm.
Hannity never explains what it is, but boy, it sounds bad. It's some sort of Obama crime. It isn't. It is just a distraction from 88,000 dead American citizens.
Mm-hmm.
The end. That's it.
Well, and just one little bit of context for that is that wonderful story. The reason we had put additional sanctions on Russia is because they spent a shitload of money on troll farms, trashing our election, hacking our election, hacking mm-hmm. the DNC's server, trying to gut the U.S. election and toss it to Donald Trump. They interfered in the United States election in a big, big way to cause Donald Trump to win. That was their goal. Mm-hmm. And that's why additional sanctions were loaded, because you're not supposed to do that. And what caused the national security apparatus to be very suspicious is because we loaded up Russia with additional sanctions. We closed down some of their compounds. We froze some assets, and they didn't do anything. They mm-hmm. didn't do anything, which is completely unusual for them. Mm-hmm. It's tit for tat. It's they do something, we do something. We do something, they do something. They didn't do anything. They couldn't figure out why the hell Putin isn't reacting. Why
is he retaliating? Right.
And the reason was he had this insider in the Republican Party in the incoming Trump administration who was promising him, don't worry. Yeah, we'll get in there. Sanctions will go away.
We'll take care of it.
Don't even worry about it.
And that was Michael Flynn.
That was Michael Flynn. Also for money. Also doing it for money. Then he lied about it. All of that is illegal. And if it had just been a matter of, you know, we have a separate national policy that we believe Russia is our friend, we're going to do it all out in the open. I think it's horrifying, but okay, fine. That's your prerogative. But they didn't. They did it behind closed doors. They did it dirty. They did it secret, and then they lied about it. And that's the crime.
And they did it in exchange for money.
And then
money
Michael
and
Flynn.
Stock. Yep.
And then Michael Flynn lied about it. Then he admitted he lied about it and pled guilty to it. There is no crime here other than the fact that Fox News has not been bombed from space. That the only crime left is that Fox News still exists as a news entity. It should be banned under some reading of the Foreign Espionage Act. The idea that you have a quote unquote news agency that is actively trying to destroy the country in which it exists should be problematic for the government of that country and for the citizens of that country. And the reason it isn't, because we have a free market and everybody can do whatever they want. The crime here is that the Republican Party exists as it does today, that Fox News still exists, that right-wing hate radio continues to flourish. Those are the crimes. And it's led to
– And it is sedition. It is absolute sedition against the United States of America, regardless of who's president.
Right. And it's one disaster after another. The Republican Party for the last 40 years has been a record of escalating catastrophe, cover-up, blame-shifting, racism, rinse, repeat, interrupted with tax cuts for rich people. That's the Republican Party.
I did want to mention that Kathleen Parker, who we've talked about in the past.
Yes, we have.
But she had an interesting article in WAPO, an editorial in WAPO, about noticing that the Koch Industries Americans for Prosperity outfit has decided not to fund these reopen rallies. And so they fizzled.
Yeah.
And so this is what Kathleen Parker said in the Washington Post. The protesters began losing steam when the Koch network, underwriters of the Tea Party movement from a decade ago, good for her for noticing that, decided to run with scientists instead of the gun-toting provocateurs trampling the spring green grass around state capitals.
Mm-hmm.
The chief executive of Americans for Prosperity, the main political arm of the network, said, The group prefers working with doctors, data crunchers, and public policy leaders to create guidelines for a safe and staggered reopening of American businesses.
Uh-huh.
I think they also prefer avoiding liability.
Yeah, I was going to say, once the lawyers got involved and said, do you realize how...
Do you realize that if people die at your rallies from the COVID, you could be held responsible? I guess we'll go with the scientists and the staggered reopening of businesses then. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a much safer position for you to go to. Mm-hmm. Yes. And again, I at the risk of repeating myself too often, these COVIDiots... Mm-hmm. Every time you come across anything about that, you need to repeat. They cashed those Glenn Beck checks in 2009 with the Tea Party. Right. They do not get to rebrand as reopening patriots, as somehow being oppressed by the virus or their governor. And this segues into our governor.
Right. Burn the lifeboats, people, is what we're trying to say.
Burn the lifeboats. Mm-hmm. In Illinois, we love the governor. Today, in today's very expensive State Journal Register, I'm really trying to decide whether we can keep the local paper coming into our house. It's now $60 a month for a newsletter that comes every day to the house.
Yeah, it's mostly crazy editorials and ads, obituaries. It's not worth it.
It just isn't. But I'm still getting it because I'm glad to read about Governor Pritzker. And here's what the paper said today about the governor of Illinois. Pritzker says he sympathizes with elected officials struggling with their choices amid the pandemic. This is about reopening the state. He has a plan that is in stages by how rural and how many cases the area has. He's divided the state into 5 regions. And it is very much based on science and facts and data. If you've had a lot of cases in your city or area, you're going to be closed down for longer. And if you haven't, and there is one county in Illinois that's had 0 cases.
Yeah.
I understand why, southeastern Illinois not having cases, they might open sooner. But they don't have much down there in terms of commerce.
Humans.
It's farms. Mm-hmm. So... I understand that. And here's his quote. He sympathizes with elected officials. What I don't have sympathy for is those so intent on disregarding science and logic, so afraid to tell their constituents what they may not want to hear, that they put more people's lives at risk. And then he turns to the elected officials. You weren't elected to do what's easy. You were elected to do what's right. He said that while there would be consequences, there is no consequence the state could impose that is greater than the harm you will do to your own community.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so proud of him for saying that.
Let's compare and contrast him.
Oh, to Governor Hedge Fund?
With Governor Hedge Fund, with disgraced former Governor Hedge Fund, who promised.
I thought he was going to move to his Italian villa when he lost the election.
He promised. His wife promised us that we're going to flounce off to Italy and never see us again if we lose. And you lost, so you should leave. But apparently he can't do that. Instead, he's sticking around in his fake cowboy outfit, and he's writing that this is worse than the disease. He blasts. Rounder blasts. This is a headline from, where is it? Where is this paper I'm quoting from? It's Chicago. It's NBC Chicago. Okay. Former Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner believes it's time to reopen the state. And amid the coronavirus pandemic, blaming politics for the decision to keep restrictions in place. In a text message, Rauner argued that the state's phased reopening plan is a boon to Democrats, who he said are looking to benefit politically from the coronavirus, which is just about the filthiest, shittiest thing you can say. Now, why is Governor Hedge Fund siding with armed lunatics trying to storm state capitals around the country? Because he wants to be in politics still. Now, contrast this with Governor Hedge Fund's headline from September of 2018 when he was running and losing an attempt to reelect himself, having failed to even propose a budget for 2 years. Do you know what he was back then, Blue Gal? You know what he was calling himself back then?
No, what was he calling himself back then?
I'm reading the headline directly from the State Journal Register. Rauner dubs himself a centrist. Yes, He's a centrist. He sat in an interview and blamed the extremes on both sides, denouncing the extremes on both sides. And he just kept failing to answer the question, did you vote for Donald Trump? Did you vote for Donald Trump? Did you vote for Donald Trump?
He wouldn't answer that question. And I remember that.
He just stared into the middle distance with his dead eyes and just changed the subject. I'm not going to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that. You know, it's really extremes on both sides are the problem, you know, and this is what they do. These are the two notes they know how to play when they are trying to keep power or knock Democrats off from power. They side with their own party. Their own party is a shit pile of bigots and imbeciles. When they're trying to impress the press, when they're trying to mollify the media, suddenly it's the extremes on both sides. Blue gal, I'm a centrist. I play it right down the middle. That didn't work for Rauner. He lost big in Illinois. And now we have a governor who actually gives a shit about whether people live or die in this state, and who will side with scientists as opposed to armed gun nuts who want to pry the doors of the state house open and let viruses in. Mm-hmm. They're plague rats, and they should be treated with great deference as citizens, but their brains are full of plague rats telling them crazy shit that Sean Hannity told them to do. And we don't need to respect that. I really do believe that part of the problem we have in Trump country, in this central Illinois area, is that people have been way too polite for way too long. And they pretend that Crazy Uncle Liberty isn't crazy, or Crazy Uncle Liberty is just a fringe group, or that it'll go away, or it's just impolite. Crazy Uncle Liberty talks about this shit all the time. They have no problem spouting off their insane beliefs. And if your reaction to that is, let's just not talk about it, let's pretend it's not happening, you know, it really is the extremes on both sides. You end up with a fucking lunatic like Trump in the White House. It's high time for people of goodwill to come to the aid of their country, to point to their Republican friends and neighbors and family members and say, no, shut the fuck up, you goddamn lunatic. You are the problem. I don't want to hear another fucking word out of your lie hole until you're off Fox News for a year. You're a junkie. And I don't want to hear the words of a junkie about how great their drug is. Anyway, I promised I'd be off my soapbox, and I got right back on it. I apologize about that. But really, I
love you, Drift Class. You know that. And I know I'm so proud to be your wife.
And I know for a fact all this will be edited out, so I'm not really worried about it at all.
No, it won't. No, it won't. I actually think that was your finest moment in the podcast.
Thank you. Well, that's bad. It's been shit up till now, but hey.
No, I didn't say that. Hey, each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. But this week we have another dog. This week's internet dog is Elvis. Elvis was sent in by our English correspondent, Andy, in England. Hi, Andy.
Andy
had coronavirus.
He did.
And I read that. It was several weeks ago. He wrote me to tell me, and I wanted to write him a big, long letter. And I never sat down to write him and tell him we love him. And I'm glad he's better. He is better.
Yeah.
Elvis belongs to Flo. And Flo is the little baby who was in Internet Kitty pajamas long, long ago, very early on in our Internet Kitty series. We posted a picture of Flo in her Internet Kitty pajamas long ago. Well, Elvis belongs to Flo. Elvis is the breed known as the golden omnivore. He'll even eat a gym bag. Yeah. So you have to watch out for Elvis. But, you know, whenever he eats, you know for a fact that it's freshly poured.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you serve Pet Store Perfection or Dollar Store Dreck, your cat or dog will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. And then I have in the notes, sing the song,
Fran. Sing the song, Fran. Do it.
Forget.
I swear to God. I swear to God, this is the most popular part of this podcast. I can talk for a month. I can hold up pictures. I can go topless. It doesn't matter.
When I hear that my kids sing along with you on mm-hmm. the when I have the podcast on, then I'm like, okay, I can't not sing it.
May I reveal a terrible secret about our family? What? My wife has invented a song for every child and every cat mm-hmm. in this house in a
every
separate
cat,
individual
every
composition.
Child has a song.
Which are great songs, which are really good. I urge her to write them down, and we'll have our own Blue Gal songbook.
Well, when I got to I'm the meanest mommy in the whole wide world, I think I reached my limit. I think that proved that three is enough. Three kids is enough. But at any rate, freshly poured, oh my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Elvis at our Facebook page or website. And you can send your internet kitty or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. We will be reading more letters next week.
We will.
I have promised myself that we need to get through some more of your letters. We so appreciate your writing to us. Hashtag save the post office. And don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. We have PayPal, Patreon, GoFundMe, Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you, everybody who's donated. We have a P.O. box that we go and check, and it's all there. All the information is there at proleftpod.com. Please share our show on social media, and thank you so much for doing that.
So, Blue Gal, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Driftglass, the Internet Kitties are starting their own Unity Task Force, but you can't join.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2019-2020, DGBG Productions.